Hello there. Today we're going to look at creating a Windows IoT Core project from File New and walking through what it takes to create a capacitive touchscreen clicker. Okay, so this is going to sort of walk you through how to get a project going from scratch. And the end result is going to be this project that is going to simulate clicks on a capacitive touchscreen. So, what you'll need to follow along here is a Raspberry Pi 2. Windows IoT Core for Raspberry Pi 2 compatible SD card running Windows IoT Core. A 5-volt relay. So I've got this one here. This is a Arduino compatible. It says Songle SRD 05VDC SLC on it. Just a typical 5-volt relay. Some wire. I've got these easy connectors here attached to my device and some tape and a piece of tin foil, preferably. It's going to be bent in this shape here. I'll show that when we actually get to the assembly portion. And it's not entirely useful, except for perhaps playing idle games. I don't know if you've ever played those games where you would click something repeatedly on a phone. So we're going to actually use this in a game called Cookie Clicker. It's a popular game. We're going to use this to simulate clicks very, very rapidly. Now, the idea behind this is they'll both introduce us to Windows IoT Core. But at the same time, I'd really like for the listeners out there to sort of think how this isn't much different than, say, the blinking light demo that we did earlier. And so you can maybe start to wrap your head around some ideas that you could build in the IoT space after seeing this video. So the first thing we'll do is we're going to launch up Visual Studio 2015. I'm going to go ahead and do File New, select Project, and from here, we'll get started with a blank universal Windows app. And you'll see down here in the picture, there's a large scale monitor, what looks like a desktop monitor, the Xbox controller phone. This is the symbol that basically shows that we're about to create a Windows application that is capable of running across these various devices, pending usage of certain SDKs. So what we're going to create here will be specific to Windows running on the Raspberry Pi, as we're going to include the IoT Core SDK in just a moment. So we'll go ahead and name this Capacitive Touchscreen Clicker. And we'll go ahead and create a directory for the solution and hit OK. And we'll just wait a moment for this to create our project. Now, one of the really cool things that I love, love, love about Windows for IoT projects is that we have the ability to create a user interface rather seamlessly using things like XAML. So we kind of talked about this on the previous video where we sort of introduced the developer tools and sort of showed how to run our first C Sharp blinking light application and C++ application. Now we're going to dive a little bit more deeper and show how to utilize XAML at sort of a basic level so that we can create this application that's going to let us control this capacitive touch screen. So again, think about the problem we have. We want to simulate clicks on a screen. So perhaps we want to do this at a certain rate. We want to control the rate, right? So we'll need to control those button presses to some degree. And with that, we're going to need to have some sort of a user interface that gives us that sort of level of control. So in just a moment, we'll go ahead and get started. First, by clicking on the mainpage.xaml. This should load up the designer, the design view editor, and you're going to see this XML looking syntax down here. This is XAML. It is a user interface language used in Windows applications, kind of started out around the time of WPF. So if you're looking for resources on how to get started with XAML, there's tons of tutorials on XAML basics, or you can even look at Silverlight or even WPF user interface documentation. Much of that will be applicable here. So the first thing I'm going to do is note that I can select the scale of my device. I'm going to go ahead and select this large 42-inch 1920 by 1080 IoT device scale. And this is going to give us a design surface area that would mimic something like that. And you'll see I have over here this grid control. And a grid is what it sounds like. It is literally a grid with which we can place other user interface components. So we want to be able to maybe control the rate at which this screen clicker is clicking, and perhaps we need a status to indicate exactly how fast it's clicking. So the first thing I'll do is in the designer, I can actually click up here and add columns and rows. So you'll note when I click or hover above here, a yellow line forms, and I can just go ahead and click there, and this creates a column definition. Now, what I'm going to go ahead and do is remove the values that fit in there. So it's going to literally give me a column definition of with a 50-50 width, basically. So half the column will be one side, and the other column will be on the other side once I remove those widths. So you'll see that's dead set in the center after I delete those values. Next, I'm going to go ahead and add a couple row here. So we'll go ahead and click, and you'll see I've added a row, and I'm going to go ahead and modify that to use this 50 star value, which is actually the same as what I just did. What this will do is say it gives 50% of the screen and then takes up the rest if there's anything left over, depending on that ratio. So since 50 and 50 gives me 100, this is going to give me basically the same thing that I had before where it's in the middle. So I could effectively remove this and we'd get the same effect, if that makes sense. Again, may want to consult some XAML user interface books if some of this isn't clear to you or is brand new, because that'll help you understand some of the basics here. Next, what I'm going to do is go ahead and add some controls. So I need like an indicator to tell me what the current rate is, and then I'm going to need some buttons to control that. So an easy way to do this, we can click on the toolbox in the upper left corner here, and inside here this will populate with some tools. And the first one that I'm going to want to use is this text block. So I'll go ahead and grab that, scroll down here, and you'll see text block and text box. A lot of times people get those confused. A text block just displays text. A text box can display text and also receive it as input. So we're just going to use a display. So I'm going to use a text block. I'm going to sort of drag that over here to the area of the screen, and you'll notice it drags us in here and it gives it a few values that are already predefined. For example, the name, the horizontal alignment, etc. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and change this name to rate text block. Rates referring to the rate at which this clicker is going to click at. And then I'm going to go ahead and modify a property called text. And this will give it the default text value. So when nothing's going on, this is going to say 00HZ for 00 Hertz. Next, what I'm going to go do is modify the margin. We'll go ahead and remove that and type in the horizontal alignment and give it a value of center. Notice when I type things in here, I do get IntelliSense that sort of tells me how I can fit in certain values. I'll go ahead and type vertical alignment equals bottom. And we'll go ahead and put this in grid 2, grid column 2, so, or give it a column span of 2, I'm sorry. So what this means is that this text block can actually reach over both columns. So I'll go ahead and set grid.columnspan equals 2. And we're going to put this in grid row 0. So you'll notice I have two grid rows. The top one would be grid row 0 and the bottom one would be grid row 1. So once I add that value in here, grid.row equals 0, you'll see that that moves into the 0 row. And I'll go ahead and give it a font size of 60, removing that vertical alignment. Whoops, we'll go ahead and remove that. Text equals text. Remove that. And you should see 00 Hertz is just laying right there. Just to show you real quick, if I change this grid.row to 1, you'll see that this moves, and it's going to take into account the other properties that I set. So remember, vertical alignment is bottom, so it's now at the bottom of grid numbered row 1. Similarly, when I push that back to 0, it moves to the original spacing where we had it. So hopefully some of that's clear. Again, I definitely recommend checking out some introduction to XAML. There's some videos on Microsoft Virtual Academy. I'll go ahead and include those at the bottom of this video. So the next thing we need is two buttons, right? So we want one maybe to decrease the rate and one to increase the rate. So what I'm going to do first is grab a button from our toolbox. Similarly, you could type this in, but I always like to just consult the toolbox because I know I'm getting what I'm asking for. And we'll drag and drop this in. And we've got our button. I'm going to go ahead and delete really all the properties that came with that and sort of start this one over again with the name. And we'll go ahead and call this one the minus button. So I'm going to go ahead and click minus or type minus. So that's our name of our button. And when we name something, you'll see this in just a moment. I can actually refer to it in my code behind whenever I've named it. So we'll see that in just a moment. So with our name in place, I'll go ahead and give this, we're gonna set this like kind of over here in the left, bottom left quadrant of our four quadrant grid here. So in order to do that, first thing I'll do is give it a large font size. Set that to 100 for right now. Perhaps change that in a moment. And I'm gonna go ahead and give it a content equal to minus. So it's literally a minus. You can see this up here. And we want to make this so that it's visible. So I'll go ahead and give it a width and height of 150. So width equals 150, height equals 150. And so now we've got a nice square button. And we'll go ahead and give this a horizontal alignment on the left. Or do we want right? I guess we're going to want right since it'll go in the bottom left quadrant. And then what we're going to want to do is set the vertical alignment. We'll go ahead and get that, set that to top. You'll see why in just a second. So we'll set the vertical alignment to top. And then that way I can go ahead and set this in grid.row equals one. And that should be right below our status indicator. So there's our minus button. And then perhaps we want to move this just a little bit over to the left. We can do that by setting the margin. And the margin takes four values, and these occur in the order left, up, right, down. So if I want this to have a margin on the right, I'd say 0 on the left, 0 on the top, perhaps 10 or 15 on the right. And you'll see that that's moved that over just a little bit. So this way I can sort of have a second button and we can push that, push it over. So the buttons aren't exactly touching each other. I'm gonna go ahead and copy this entire line and paste this again down here, but we're gonna do something a little bit different. Let's go ahead and call this one plus and give it a content of the plus sign. Width stays the same. We'll change the horizontal alignment to left. And we're gonna go ahead and change its column property. So we've got the column, the row set, but we wanna go ahead and put this in grid.column equals one. Now, you may wonder why we didn't set grid.column on the previous button. It's because the default value is actually grid.column equals zero when nothing is set. So when we explicitly set this to one, we're overriding that default value and putting it into the bottom right quadrant. And now I'm gonna go ahead and modify my margin. Remember, it's left, up, right, down. So we're going to go ahead and make this have a margin on the left of 15, and that pushes our button over to the right. So we've got a user interface now. You can sort of see this in play where it's got our hertz, our minus, and our plus. But what's really cool about this, think about the power you have here. Instead of installing like a hardware knob or something like that in order to adjust our values that we're going to be modifying in the code behind, we can actually do this in the user interface. So this makes for a really great ability for testing circuits that you're going to create. So we've got our user interface created. A few things. I know that when we click this button in the minus button that we're going to want to do something. So what we can do is click the minus button. And over here in Visual Studio, there is this event handler button. It looks like a lightning bolt. We'll go ahead and click that. And we're going to just double click on the click method. And this creates a method called minus click and drops it into our code behind. So just like that. And to do this similarly for the plus button, we'll go ahead and click it, click on the events editor, and then we'll go ahead and double click. And this will add a plus click method. So we'll define what those do in just a moment. So we're now in our code behind. We have methods that will fire whenever those buttons are clicked, the minus and the plus. And inside of here, we'll see that we can set up our logic to actually control our circuit and at the same time respond to the user interface. So what I'm going to do here first is talk a little bit about how to initialize. Really, any project is going to have something like this. And you'll see this is very similar to the code that was in the previous video example of blinking the light. So we'll start by adding in a GPIO pin, and you're going to notice real quick here that I'm unable to resolve the type GPIO pin. This is because this is located in the windows.devices.gpio namespace, and I don't believe we're going to have access to that yet because we haven't added the IoT SDK. So let's see here, windows.devices, and you'll see there is no GPIO. So what we're going to need to do is add a quick reference. And what we'll do is click here on the Universal Windows extensions. And then here is the Windows IoT extensions for the UWP. I'm going to go ahead and click OK. Now note, when I'm in this code behind, when I try to enumerate on windows.devices, I now do see windows.devices.gpio. So we'll go ahead and add that. And now I can start using the type GPIO pin. So we'll define a GPIO pin and just name it pin for now. And we'll also use a type of GPIO pin value to control the value of this pin. So we'll go ahead and call this pin value. Jumping a little bit ahead, I know how this circuit works, but I'm going to just dive in here real quick to show you. We're going to have essentially a relay connected to the ground, the 3.3 volts positive voltage off of the power rail here, and we're going to then connect a control signal to GPIO pin 5 of the Raspberry Pi. So how this all works, there are various pins on the Raspberry Pi, and they all perform different behaviors. Some of these are specific GPIO pins, and GPIO are general purpose input output. So they can be set to act as input or output pins. In our particular case, we're going to be using an output pin, and we're going to be using GPIO pin 5, which is the pin, six pins from the left when you're looking at this counting from the bottom right quadrant here. So you'll see there's two rails. Each of these has a certain number of pins on it. And if we count on the second rail, counting all the way from the right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that will be our GPIO pin line. Similarly, we've got our ground, which is all the way on the left, and we've got our power, which is all the way on the right. There's various other grounds on the board. There may be other places to tap power, but this is the way that I drew up this particular circuit. So you may find there's another way to wire this up that will work. Essentially, we'll be connecting the signal pin to that GPIO pin that we've defined here in the code. So I just wanted to make that clear. We haven't exactly looked at the circuit yet, or the assembly, but this should make a little bit of sense on why this code is coming together the way it is. So then I'll go ahead and define, we'll just call this constant since it's not going to change, the signal pin. And we'll set this to 5. So what this is going to refer to is this is going to refer to GPIO pin 5, which is, according to our circuit diagram, where we're going to have that signal line connected. And I'm going to create a dispatcher timer. And what this is a special timer that runs on the UI thread, meaning it can do things that can modify the user interface. And we're going to want to do that. So remember, when we were creating our user interface, we created this rate text block, and we're going to want to update that. And so we're going to update that by modifying it on a dispatcher thread. This may not be clear, but if you modify user interface elements from a background thread, you'll get a cross-thread access exception. So in this case, we're going to use a special dispatcher timer that runs on the UI thread. So it's going to fire off events at a specific interval and allow us to modify the user interface. It'll make a lot more sense in just a moment. Then we'll go ahead and define private double hertz, and we'll just give this an initial value of 35. This means 35 cycles per second is how we're going to have this thing clicking whenever we first fire off the program. So let's talk a little bit more about initialization. So this initialize component is actually going to initialize the XAML renderer. Now what we need to do is sort of kick off things so that we can interact with the hardware and update our user interface at the same time. So the first thing I'll do is create a timer. We'll say timer equals new dispatcher timer. So we're basically just initializing that timer that we created up above. And we're going to go ahead and set a property on there called interval, and we're going to give this a time span in milliseconds, from milliseconds. And I'm going to go ahead and, so this is easy, utilize the Hertz formula, or cycles per second. So we'll go ahead and 1 over, and then we'll say Hertz divided by 1,000. It's a simple formula that will give us the appropriate milliseconds to wait depending on the Hertz value that we've selected. So just basic math there. Then we're going to go ahead and define timer.tick. And we're going to go set, and this is a event syntax, so we're going to subscribe to a timer tick method. So we're going to go ahead and create this. And you'll notice that this doesn't exist. So when I hover over this, Visual Studio can actually create this method for me. So we'll say go ahead and generate method timer tick. And this should be good enough. We might modify this in just a moment. But for now, that is working. And then we're going to create another method called initGPIO. So we've set up our dispatcher timer. And what this is going to do is fire off an event every X amount of milliseconds, depending on the hertz we've defined. So we can sort of capture at that time what's going on, or modify values, or even update the user interface. So it makes sense a little bit more as we dive clearer. And before we jump into anything, we need to set up the GPIO pin. So remember, these general purpose input-output pins can be input or output. We have to actually define that somewhere. So what I'm going to go ahead and do is create a method called initGPIO. And again, we'll use this show potential fixes and create a method. So I right-clicked on that, and we've now created a method initGPIO, throw new, not implemented an exception. So we're going to go ahead and change that in just a moment. And let's do just a couple things. I know that if the pin value is null, because we're going to change the pin value in this init GPIO method, if that's null, we don't want to really do anything. But if it's not null, then we can go ahead and start our timer. So this timer actually has to be kicked off, so we'll say timer.start. Basically what this is a sanity check. We're saying, hey, if my pin is valid, if it's not null, go ahead and start the timer so I can start firing off events at our interval. And also, I'm going to set up my default value for the rate text block. So we'll say rate text block.text equals, we'll say hertz.toString. And then I'm going to add to that the following string, a space with hz after it. So this will read the value of hertz and update the text block to that value. So remember, text block is currently initialized to say 00 hertz, and this is going to override that and set that to 35, since that's the value we have set up here. Now what I'll go ahead and do is follow along with initializing the GPIO. So this is something you'd probably do in most Windows IoT projects. So go ahead and do var GPIO. Var is a kind of a wildcard variable. It will take the type that's on the right side of it. So when I say GPIO, var GPIO equals GPIO controller.getDefault, it will actually take on that type, whatever that returns. You can sort of hover over this and see var is actually a GPIO controller. So similar to JavaScript if you've ever used that. And we'll do a little bit of sanity checking here. So we might want to show an error if there is no GPIO controller. And we'll do this by saying if GPIO equals null, then set pin equal to null. And this should also not allow our timer to start, so we'll set pin equals null. And we'll just return. Probably would be good to throw an exception there, but just for time purposes, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that this all comes through safely. So, continuing on, once we've got that defined, we can go ahead and affect our pin. So remember, we're going to set pin equals GPIO. So we've got a controller at this point because we've checked if it was null. GPIO dot open pin. And we're going to open the signal pin that we defined earlier. So this will open pin 5. And let's go ahead and set its value, pin value equals GPIO pin value dot high. And then say pin dot write pin value. So what this is going to do is send a value of high to GPIO pin 5. And we're also going to set its drive mode. So remember, these can be set to be inputs or outputs. So let's set the drive mode of this pin 2 equal GPIO pin drive mode dot output. And if we get through all of this code, this should, no, sorry, pin dot set drive mode, missing my dot here. If we go through all of this successfully, this should initialize pin. So when we call init GPIO, pin will be initialized and set to receive output. And this will cause pin not to equal null, which will cause the timer to start. So now we're going to be inside of our timer tick method. And what we're going to go ahead and do here is if the pin value, this is a simple toggle, so if pin value equals GPIO pin value dot high, then we're going to go ahead and set it to low. So it's a simple toggle, just like turning a light on and off. So we'll say pin value equals GPIO pin value dot low. And we'll go ahead and do pin dot write. So remember, we're affecting pin value at this point. Then we're going to say pin dot write pin value. And the only thing we have left now is to affect minus click and plus click. And these will be pretty similar. So I do know this from testing this code. We want to make sure that hertz does not go less than 1. So we'll say if hertz equals 1, we're going to go ahead and return. And then what we're going to do is say if the minus click has been pressed, we're going to decrement hertz. So we'll use hertz minus minus. That'll make hertz equal to hertz minus hertz equals the current value of hertz minus 1. And then set timer.interval will now change to, we're actually going to use the same code from up here. We'll say timer.interval equals that new hertz value, essentially. We're just going to compute the milliseconds, though, with that new hertz value. And we'll also need to update our text block with the new hertz value. So we'll go ahead and add that. And similarly, this method will be almost exactly the same for the plus click, with the exception that we're going to increment, and we don't need to check if hertz is equal to 1 at this point. So we should now have a toggle, so something that's going to turn off and on at a rate that is defined by our hertz value, that should be able to be controlled and modified through the user interface that we defined in our mainpage.xaml. So a lot going on there. So let's go ahead and deploy this to our remote machine. I'm going to go ahead and use my IP address for this device, which is 192.168.135. And I'm going to set authentication mode to none. So again, I did this by selecting up where it says local machine. I selected remote machine, gave it the IP address of my Raspberry Pi 2 device running Windows IoT Core, set authentication mode to none, and we'll go ahead and hit select. And let's see if we can deploy this over. It's restoring packages, building. Everything looks like we coded it appropriately, so this should work. So we'll go ahead and deploy. Just make sure that works. And in the meantime, we need to sort of set up our circuit, right, so that we're actually simulating clicks to the screen. Before I do that and talk about how this works, I just want to make sure that the code works and deploys appropriately. And then we'll go into talking about how to assemble this circuit for this particular use case. So you can see over here in the screen, I've got my Raspberry Pi up. It's waiting for the deploy. And we'll see what happens here. Oh, yikes. I deployed this as an x86 package. We need to deploy this as an ARM. So I did get an error when attempting to deploy. So make sure your dropdown is set to ARM. And we'll set this to remote machine. And again, I'm going to need to configure this, 192.168.1.135. Authentication mode set to none. So be careful with that. I did accidentally select the wrong device there. So let's attempt to deploy this again to the remote machine. We'll see if that works. Deploy is starting. While that's going off, before we actually jump into the circuit, I'd like to show just a few things that on why this works and how you can find a little bit more information about this. So I found this article on how stuff works, and it's basically how does capacitive touchscreens work. And we find that if you change the capacitance in an area of the screen, which we can do with a relay, then we can simulate that a click has taken place. And you'll notice, good news, our app has deployed here. So you can read all about this and all the different types of systems that exist. There's resistive, and there's also surface acoustic wave. In the case of most cell phones, and the one we're using here, this is a capacitive touchscreen. I'm also going to include documentation for the relay that we're using. And you're going to notice there's a little bit of a trick here, and you can see this in the documentation where the relay armature is. So if you're not familiar with how a relay works, there's essentially, whenever voltage is applied, it can create an magnet, which will close a switch inside the device. And it actually acts as a voltage-controlled switch, if you will. The idea, if you are curious, did come from a project called Building a Circuit That Plays Piano Tiles. So Piano Tiles was a popular iPhone, iPad game. And I took a look at what these guys at NITW did. I'll have links to this as well. They essentially did something very similar, where they connected relays up to the screen, and then they could tell what color
That can play the key.
the screen was, and using they actually use an Arduino for this.
Jump if I
They could
that that.
play this game at very high speeds, so they could kind of sense whether it was light or dark, right? Using lights, photoresistors, and a similar base concept. So it looks like our code deployed appropriately and is fired off, but of course we don't have the circuit appropriately wired at this time. So let's go over that. So a few things going on here. I'm going to stop the program from running since we know everything is more or less sane. I've got my Pi device here. I've got the phone here. What I'm going to do is take a piece of tin foil, and this is going to create something that will simulate changing the capacitance. This is just a regular piece of tin foil, and I've kind of folded it like a cone at the top. So if you grab some foil, you might want to fold it over itself so it looks a bit like a gum wrapper, and then you'd sort of twist the tip here. Attached to a piece of tape. And real quick, you can see whenever you apply this to the area of the screen where you want to click, right? So this foot here of the foil, I'm going to kind of tape there where I want to click, somewhere on the actual cookie in this particular game. You'll notice when I touch it, it simulates a click, and you also want to make sure that when you touch the top that it simulates a click. And this is because of the conductance of the foil. So now what we're going to do is connect up our circuit. So remember that on the rail, I've used here, this is my relay. It's an Arduino compatible 5-volt relay. My white lit wire is my signal. Red is the positive voltage, and the black is the ground. So I'm going to go ahead and connect my ground here, and I'll go ahead and connect the red to the 3V3 over here, and then count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 from the left. I'll try that again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And that should be GPIO pin 5. Again, I'm referencing this from the schematic for the our Raspberry Pi 2 pinouts. So it looks like I've got power because I've got a little red light here. And if you notice on the bottom of this, there is a particular this pin here, I believe, is the actual armature. And we're going to connect that pin up to our foil to simulate the click. Okay, you want to be very careful that down here at the bottom that we don't create a short where our power and our ground is. So we're going to look specifically at right here, this particular pin connected to the armature. So I'm going to go ahead and deploy this code again. And you should start to hear the relay will actually start clicking. Once the code starts firing off, so it should start clicking at 35 hertz. So we'll see here in just a moment. So long as we're appropriately connected to the pins. So let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Make sure that we are, in fact, getting that click signal. So one of the really cool things that I love about being deploying applications in Windows IoT Core is that we can actually use the debugger inside of Visual Studio to sort of see what's happening here, right? So in just a moment, you will notice that the code that we wrote earlier seems to have clicked only one time whenever we turned the device on. And this is because in the timer tick method, we didn't do a full toggle. We only toggled it once. So when the value was high, we set the pin value to low. So we're going to need to modify this real quick. So I'm going to go ahead and stop the running program. And we'll go ahead and add a else condition here. So this is an appropriate toggle. Just kind of passed over that real quick. So else if pin value equals GPIO pin value dot high, whoops, or else pin value dot high, and then we'll go ahead and do pin dot write pin value. Go ahead and just copy this. So basically what I'm stating here is if the value is high, set it to low, else just set the value to high. And so we'll go ahead and deploy this again with everything wired up as we did before. And we should hear this clicking pretty rapidly now. So you can hear it. And what we're going to go ahead and do is attach that to the armature pin that we showed before. Let's go ahead and do that. And you'll notice that as soon as that's attached, we start to get simulated clicks going to the device. So you'll see the scores going up pretty rapidly. In addition, since we have our user interface, I can go ahead and fire up my mouse over here on the user interface screen, and we can go ahead and decrease. Let's do that first. We'll go ahead and decrease the hertz. And you'll see that my clicking is starting to slow down, right? So I can set this to one cycle per second. And it is still creating the single click onto the cookie, meaning we've sort of zeroed in there. And what I can then do is, what we probably all want to see is, let's see just how fast we can make this go. So I'm going to go ahead and raise the hertz. I believe the screen usually tops out at about 40 clicks per second, but I'll go higher than that. We'll set this up to... It'll be a little crazy with it. Hopefully not burn up our relay, but let's just go ahead and set this to 150 hertz. Why not? And you'll see the points in the game are now adding up rather quick. In fact, there is an indicator at the top of the screen there. It says that we are currently clicking at 45 clicks per second, I think was the highest it was showing, 42, 45, averaging around 39. And this is probably due to a limitation on the screen. But you'll see I am simulating those clicks just as if it was a real finger, and we're driving that using a relay. Now the power here, hopefully that you figured out, is that we can do some rather amazing things with some simple code. You know, the blinking of the light code might seem boring, but actually toggling things and toggling things rapidly can produce some interesting real-world results. In this case, we're actually gathering quite a few points in a popular, what they would call an idle game or a clicker game. In addition, you've seen how we can create an IoT solution from scratch. So we can actually go in, file new, create a user interface that allows us to control various parameters of our hardware. And we've also seen how to sort of set up this event loop that we can capture events from and even respond to based on clicks and events that occur in our user interface. So remember, we did use the dispatcher timer. We set an interval for this, and this is actually firing off every few seconds to update itself, right? So on this timer tick value, it's actually creating going through a toggle. So it's going high if it's low and low if it's high. And this allows us to create that physical representation of a click. So pretty cool stuff. I hope what you guys take from this is that using some simplicity and creativity and a little bit of knowledge about electronics and circuitry, and perhaps doing some research on some devices that you want to interact with, you can very easily create and prototype useful scenarios using the Windows IoT Core on Raspberry Pi. So again, this is yet another example where we're showing how to use Windows to interact with hardware. What we're looking at next is how to deal with a variety of other sensors. So far, we've really used digital output. One of the things that we might want to look into is how to read from analog sensors. And this actually poses a bit of an issue because the Raspberry Pi 2 and Raspberry Pi as well, they don't support analog input. So what we're going to do is create a analog to digital conversion using a popular off-the-shelf chip. And we're going to plug that into one of these digital pins and we'll read from that. So we'll be able to utilize a whole array of off-the-shelf analog sensors. So all that is coming up in the next video. So for right now, hopefully you guys have learned everything you need to know to get started if you're looking into using GPIO and digital stuff. And stay tuned for the next one where we're going to talk about getting into analog sensors. So until then, happy hacking.